Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Steve Pape can't hold me back. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and your smart speakers. I mean, we've been all over the place today. Which ESPN two-on-two teams wins the tournament? Bart and Han, noon Eastern here on ESPN Radio. Challenge, Key and Jay. Man, I got a buck on my guys at least. At least.
Man.
So we got to get into, look, you heard about Kyrie just went, you know, fasting for Ramadan, by the way. Hits his first 12 shots. The dude is operating on another level. With KD, they pose a challenge for anyone. We're going to get into all that. We got Mel Kiper coming up. Nick Friedel's going to be here at 9:30 to talk about KD and Kyrie. But, guys, I want you to listen to what Brian Windhorst said about ESPN Inside, NBA Insider, of course, on Greeny. Said about Westbrook and the Lakers. Key J, listen to this.
Frankly, I thought Frank Vogel was more supportive of Westbrook than he should have been. He stuck with him longer. He kept him in the starting lineup longer. If you want to criticize Frank Vogel for stuff that he did this year, he was too supportive of Westbrook. And here we have Westbrook talking about how he wasn't. I mean, it's borderline delusional. And I can't come into a situation when I've got a really good job right now or other options and try to deal with a player who is delusional like this. So I would say yesterday was not a step forward in the attractiveness of the Los Angeles job.
Key, I always appreciate how hard Westbrook goes at it all the time. Like, always gives you your money's worth. But I understand what Windy is saying here. I agree with it. Like, you know me, I thought that Westbrook was going to turn it on in the second half. Last four consecutive seasons, new team, new teammates. He's awful in the first half. He's great in the second half. It never happened for the Lakers, though. He started playing better. And I understand what Westbrook is saying. Like, look, LeBron and AD were hurt all year. So we never really got going. That's true. But Key, Windy is right to me because of this. If Westbrook is basically saying, look, I need these kind of ideal circumstances to get the best out of myself, even the best of him has never won a championship, and he's been on a lot of great teams. With everything else going on with the Lakers, it doesn't look like it's making it more attractive right now.
Yeah, but look, his delusion may be true, though. Who's to say that the way he feels isn't correct? I need certain circumstances to be successful to ultimately win that championship. That's why I joined the Lakers, because I know I can't do it by myself, even though I need to be the same player that I've always been wasn't good enough. And if I can be the same player that I've always been and I got AD and LeBron James, then ultimately I can go ahead and win my championship. What's wrong with that?
He might be right.
Frank,
he might
be right. What's wrong with that? And then again, he is in the room. He understands the dialogue and the communication, Jay, that he had with Frank Vogel. We don't understand that, okay? LeBron James, a couple days ago, in the exit interviews that he had, he spoke about having Westbrook do the things that he's capable of doing, having him play the wing on the outside, having AD be the lob guy. That never came to fruition because they was never together. Why is that an issue? I don't understand why Westbrook is getting all this blowback from people. I just don't get it.
So let me try to break this down, because I think Russell Westbrook is a symptom, but I see the reasoning why people are going at him the way they are. It reminds me a little bit of Dak Prescott. Hear me out. Dak Prescott got the bag. So when you get a bag that big, people expect for you to be that player all the time.
Fair.
Russell Westbrook will be making $47 million next year. Will be the highest paid player in the NBA. Key, every time I hear that number, I'm like, damn, that's a lot of money. So if I'm thinking about a guy who's making $47 million, you should be able to get your team right there on the verge, even with injuries of AD. Or LeBron was injured, not to the same degree that AD was. LeBron was out there giving you 30-9 for a lot of games this season, until towards the end they started to shut him down because he was always injured or hurt. But what I'm saying for Russell Westbrook, like, that's something that you just need to own. So I get the nuances of it, but people don't want to hear the details when they see you getting paid as a max superstar player. People don't care about that. It don't matter.
I understand. I understand the money part of it, though, Jay. And I'm not a Westbrook apologist. He didn't pay me to come on our show and defend him or none of that. I just know that sometimes in professional sports, when a star player doesn't see eye to eye in a situation, sometimes it affects them on the field, on the court, on the diamond, when they don't see eye to eye with the coaches. And when you hear Westbrook say that he couldn't do the things that he wanted to do, could that be because Frank Vogel said, no, we don't want you doing that, when AD and LeBron were not in the lineup and didn't allow him to be the Westbrook that we have seen over the last 16 years of his career? No, could it be that?
Know what? Maybe, Key. But you know what? Westbrook this year to me has kind of turned into a sympathetic figure because I just feel bad for him. Like, ooh, I don't want to see him in that position. And I think I understand what you're saying, Jay. Like, he can bring it on himself.
$27 million.
But I get it. He's getting paid and all that. But I'm just talking about on a human level. There's always been crazy love for Westbrook in L.A. from the area, UCLA, the whole thing, right? What I think now the real problem is Lakers fans want the Lakers to win. And he's sucking up $47 million of the cap, and they finished out of the play-in. The whole point in having Westbrook is even if you don't have LeBron or AD, you can at least get to the playoffs. So if it sounds like he's making excuses in L.A., then he's going to start to lose support where he really has his main support.
That kills me.
And, Key,
yeah, I get
just to back
up your
point, it's low-hanging fruit. And also, Key, you know, because I get the nuances of it. I mean, the guys out there playing with Taylor Horton Tucker, Wingyan Gabriel, DJ. They got DJ Augustine.
Like Stanley
he was
going to
be the difference maker.
Stanley Johnson.
At least those teams when he played in Houston, he had Clint Capella. He had guys that can space the floor, knock it down with James. He had no options. But all I'm trying to say is people don't care about that. People care about the headline, $47 million. You need to be the guy.
And I understand. And he said things like, championships doesn't mean anything. He said some stuff that make people feel a certain way in L.A. in particular because all we as Laker fans know is championships. Look, transition periods in sports or anything, jobs for that matter, when you go from one place to the next, it takes some time. We all assume, based on Max Kellerman, you know, a handsome guy, 2 to 3, you see him every day.
This just in.
Would tell us that it's going to change. He went from, just wait till the second half of the All-Star game. It's going to change. Just wait. And it never changed.
Well, it changed a little toward the end, I thought.
Keith. Yeah, but it was a little too late at that point.
Too late. But a dollar short.
So I think people started feeling like, okay, hope. Even myself. I'm like, I got the life jacket on. I'm right by the rail, but I haven't dove into the boat yet, the tender. I'm still holding on for dear life and hoping that the Lakers do something. And it never came to fruition. I'm willing to run it back with the 3 ice creams and find some toppings and some bananas to go around them. I'm willing to do that.
Westbrook.
Because I think you can be good with those 3 players.
At a certain point in his career, guys, he was so effective as a team carrier that even without KD, it was like, who's better, Westbrook or KD? I know, you'd always take it, but Westbrook was that good at a certain point where it was like, he's an MVP caliber player. Let me just say something. That level player cannot miss a play-in tournament if he plays the whole season. You know, and the Lakers have LeBron for 50-plus games and Westbrook, and AD only got into 40 games, and you missed the play-in. They got 2 extra slots. Basically, it's a Lakers tournament. It's to make sure the Lakers don't miss the playoffs more than anything. And they missed the play-in? Oh, it's so bad. And when Westbrook makes some of the comments, Key, that you referred to just then, it's just a bad look. He's looking bad right now. The flip side of that is this. Guys, if the Lakers can't move the contract, they're going to have to run it back. And it can't get worse, can it? Like, Key, if they just get a couple guys who can shoot and these guys play, two-thirds of the game next year, they should be pretty good, I think.
I what has to happen is LeBron has to buy into the young players and not get so bogged in that he's got to have veteran guys. Find some young, scrappy players that can shoot, that can play defense, and build around LeBron with that, and I think they have a fighting chance. If they go out there and try to pick up a whole bunch of old raggedy dogs again, then they're going to be in the same position they was in before.
If they could pull it off with Indiana, if this team found a way to get Malcolm Brogdon and Buddy Hield, I don't know how they would pull that off cap-wise, but if they found a way to pull that off with some other tradable assets, I now think you're talking about championship teams.
Instead of Westbrook?
Potentially, yes.
I think the best thing they could do is wait till the trade deadline if they want to move Westbrook and pick up some nice functional pieces that another team's looking to clear cap space from that would fit with LeBron and AD if they're going to move on. But I don't see them getting no Hield and Brogdon for Westbrook. I wish. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max is presented by Progressive Insurance. Mel Kiper Jr. with us. Mel, what's going on, brother?
Great to be with you guys. Finally put to bed the Mach 4.0, but the second round, the first time I did that this year, going deep into the second round. A lot of fun to do, and a lot of good players left off the boards in the first two rounds, which means this is going to be a pretty deep draft overall, guys.
Isn't it amazing how every year, this is going to be the year, no quarterbacks in the top 10. Mel, can you tell us what just happened in this latest mock in 4.0? What just happened?
Again, you talk to the people in the league. That's where you get your intel from. It's not about what I think is going to happen or what I would do. It's about what the league's going to do come April 28th. And I talked to some guys I really respect, and they said that Malik Willis is going to be the guy. It goes back to, do you learn from your mistakes? Does the NFL learn from their mistakes? You know, Justin Herbert wasn't the first or second quarterback taken. Josh Allen wasn't the first or second quarterback. Lamar Jackson was, what, the end of the first round. And these are the most talented guys in those drafts, Allen, Jackson, and Herbert. Yet other guys were taken ahead of them. And, again, Malik Willis, most talented quarterback in this draft. Why wouldn't Carolina, you're worrying about winning now with a rookie quarterback, really, with Kenny Pickett, the 24 years old. Yes, he will be 24 when he's a rookie. He's actually 5 years older than Jordan Love, who's with the Packers going into year three, if you can believe that. But I just think Pickett at 20 of the Steelers, if he's there, made sense. And Willis is the guy that people say, if there's going to be a guy going to top 10, it's going to be Malik Willis. And in fact, I had one team say, if there's a quarterback deserving of being in the first round, it would only be Malik Willis. And that was one team, not everybody. And I had another team say there was only two, Willis and Pickett. So, you know, and you're stretching to get a third quarterback in the first round. That's why I only put the two in round one.
Mel, when you look at now, you got two rounds of your mock draft out, and Desmond Ridder is at 40. Is his stock kind of rising since we got to the offseason and they got a chance to put the eyeballs on him? He's a little slight for me, but yet and still, they've evaluated him not only on the field but now off the field.
Yeah, the character key is a big thing with him. It's off the charts. I think he wows people over in these months leading up to the draft in the interview process. Yeah, I think you look at what he did for Luke Fickell at Cincinnati outside of the Alabama game when the team was out, man. He was outstanding dual-threat quarterback. Is he perfect? No. He needs to tweak some things in terms of accuracy and precise passing. But I think in the second round, if you look at Seattle, Detroit, maybe early in round two, maybe somebody trades into the back end of round one to take either he or Matt Corral. But if you don't project that type of trade, guys, then you've got a quarterback dropping because there's very few teams in round two are going to prioritize a Desmond Ridder or a Matt Corral. That's why Corral dropped a little bit. He could still be a late one early, too. It's just, you know, is the trade going to happen? I didn't want to project that because that would be a little crazy at that point. But, you know, either one of those two, Ridder or Corral, could still end up in the late first round.
Well, Mel, coming off that, you got Matt Corral dropping to 49 to the Saints. That's 29 spots from where you had him in 1.0 draft, where you have him going 20 to the Steelers. Like, why such a huge drop-off?
Well, I think the RPO, the RPO system, the fact that he plays bigger than he is, which means he takes hits where he's going to have to learn to get down, and he puts that body in a lot of harm's way. He's got to learn the trajectory of throws in the NFL, different than what he was used to. Deep ball accuracy. There's a lot of different things he needs to work on, where Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin's offense allowed him to have a ton of success. He is a super tough, gritty competitor. He does have a strong arm. He can spin it. But there's some things from transitioning from Ole Miss's offense to the NFL that I think, you know, is a little, I would say, a red flag, but pushes him down just a bit from where he was once considered maybe a lock first rounder. That's no longer the case.
Okay. The Jets take Thibodeau at 4, and the Giants take Johnson at 7, right? Mm-hmm. How close are these two players?
Well, you know, if you go back to the beginning of the year, you would say they weren't close at all because Johnson hadn't done anything really spectacular at Georgia. He had some sacks. He had, what, 6.5 and 7.5 tackles for loss in 2 years. Not real impressive. So he was kind of the guy that you thought could be really good, but you hadn't seen it yet. Where Thibodeau, we had seen, heard the hype. We watched him in high school, college, and what he had done. So you look at the numbers. After all is said and done, Thibodeau had 19 career sacks. Johnson had 18. Now, Thibodeau had, you know, more, had 11 more tackles for loss, but sack numbers the same. And the thing that impressed me with Johnson, second in total tackles on that team. Now, you say, who bends the edge better? Johnson does. Johnson has better bend. Who's the more overall player that wows you at times? It's Thibodeau because he's got power. He's got that great first-step quickness. I mean, his get-off is better than anybody. So they're a little different. But I think if you look at Thibodeau, the body of work, really good. Johnson is considered a one-year wonder. I'm not buying that because he did some things at Georgia. He flashed. But this year, he was off the charts at Florida State from his sacks, getting into the backfield, and also that tackle number, which is really impressive for a player that like I say, plays hard, plays physical, and has that quickness and bend that you want. So I think Johnson's deserving of being a top 10 pick.
You know, man, when I look at Thibodeau, I don't like his point of attack. Yes, he is a left-to-right side type guy, which means that he's going to go and chase down the backside, no question about it. But at the point of attack, he doesn't necessarily shed the blocks the way that I would like to. When I look at Johnson, he gives me more of a safe bet opposed to a high ceiling with Thibodeau, which scares me a little bit on the Thibodeau side. Yeah, I like all the talent. We said the same things about Jadeveon Clowney coming out. He's been on his, fourth, fifth team now, and he's in free agent looking again when he was a can't-miss prospect that's number one overall. So I wonder, am I off on that or am I hitting it right?
I think Thibodeau, he's a tough evaluation key. I'm with you. The pass rush moves, we talked about that all year. He needs to develop a wide variety of pass rush moves, which aren't there right now. But that get-off, that initial quickness is off the charts. And then you think about what he's done inside. He's been disruptive there. He's got that power. And I really said this, I believe this, and I've said it over the last month. The fact that he's getting criticized, the fact that he may not be the first, second, until the third defensive lineman drafted behind Trayvon Walker and behind Aiden Hutchinson, may in fact say make a wake-up call. I mean, he was number one coming out of high school. He was number one in August. Everybody talked about it. He didn't shut it down after the Fresno State injury, first game of the year. I think some players, again, you've been around these guys, sometimes you need some extra motivation. I like guys that say, boy, oh, really? Okay, I'm not being praised anymore. I'm being criticized. What's the deal with this? And he finally got it. And now he's going to see the draft unfold. Maybe he's the third defensive lineman drafted. If that's not a wake-up call, I don't know what is.
Mel, when I hear key, just look at a guy and be like, I'm not sure about this guy. And when you're talking about a top five pick or top 10 pick in the draft, right? Like, at a certain point, you want to know, does he love football, right? I mean, like, this, you just want to know, is he going to be, if you're losing a top 10 pick, he should be special. What are you hearing about that aspect of Thibodeau?
Well, I heard about Myles Garrett. Did he love football? He was into dinosaurs and different things like that and had a life beyond football. And, you know, he was doing all these different things. He had a lot of interests. And he was a smart kid. He wasn't just about football. Sometimes, and Myles Garrett, you know, was a phenomenal player in college. 31 sacks, 47 tackles for loss, okay? And you think about where Thibodeau had 19 sacks, not 31. 35.5 tackles for us, not 47, but Miles was special. But people were still, I mean, I'm battling guys before he was picked number one. I'm battling everybody on a set that didn't like Myles Garrett, that questioned whether he was dedicated enough to football, if football was important enough. So you can have other interests and still be a great football player in the NFL. For Thibodeau, to me, I understand the interviews. You know, did he say the right thing? What did he mean by that? I get all that stuff when you overanalyze all this, these guys. That's what we do. I wish the draft was in February because you may not have some of that like it used to be back in the day. But, I'm with you on kind of the boom or bust aspect of this. If you had a list 10 guys that would be considered that, you might put Thibodeau in that group. We've done it with a lot of defensive linemen over the last 40 years that I've been doing this. But to me, he's worthy of being a top 7 pick. I have him going 4. I don't think he gets lower than 7.
Mel, let's get the Keys' favorite position, the wide receivers. You have Garrett Wilson now as a top wide receiver on the board, ahead of USC's Drake London. Why the change there?
clean this through the process, Jay. Well, it's about, you know, who checks every box. Now, his route running, even though Brian Hartline's a great coach, we know that, the route running is an area he needs to work on. He just goes out. He's a baller. He just says, hey, I'm going to get open. I'm going to beat this corner. You're going to run around. And remember, he had Justin Fields and he had C.J. Stroud. These guys had some great quarterbacks throwing the ball to him. I'm talking about Olave and certainly a guy like Garrett Wilson. Remember, Jameson was there, and then he goes to Alabama. And Jameson would have been the top guy had he not gotten hurt. But for Garrett, the run the way he did, to have the versatility he does, to go get the football. I mean, he's just a natural athlete, spectacular athlete. And Drake London hasn't been talking about clean through the process, coming off the fractured ankle, not running for the clock. You know, he's a contested catch guy. He's the power forward. The guy who has the wow factor in terms of speed and separation and all that is Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, you know, and that's what scared me all along when we came out with Drake London going as high as the top. What did you have him at? It was in six, I think, initially.
Yeah, 4 and 6, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 4 and 6 initially. That was one of the problems that I had. I said once the process comes down to it and they start really evaluating him versus the other receivers in this year's draft, like a Garrett, like a Wilson, that people are going to start to pick it apart because he won't have the clock speed. They will start to say he's only a basketball player. He doesn't have the sudden quickness in and out of the breaks. That's why I felt like if the Jets dropped down and picked him up somewhere in the middle of the first round, it would be a great pickup for him because they need a big target in the red zone. I know they got Corey Davis, obviously, and they got Moore, Elijah Moore, which is more of a Swiss Army knife for them, but getting a big, tall, long, tall drink of water stud like that, it will certainly help them out.
Let me say this, Key, real quick. I've talked to some teams that love Drake London. I know there's a couple guys. Now, they're not necessarily going to take a receiver, but they love Drake London. They think he's the best receiver in this draft. So Drake London has some love. It's just trying to figure out, okay, the teams they're picking there, what are you hearing? And Wilson just is red hot. And like I say, checks all the boxes where Drake is coming off the fractured ankle, and he hasn't had the process really work in his favor like some of the other guys. Doesn't mean he won't come into the NFL and be DeAndre Hopkins, who they had the same questions about coming out of Clemson. He goes in the late first round. Why? Contested catch guy. Doesn't get separate. DeAndre Hopkins is a great player. So you look at Drake. I think Drake, the product. Like I said, I had a guy formerly in the league has a Super Bowl ring, former GM, that loves Drake London. So Drake's getting some love. It's just like the process has been more favorable for Garrett Wilson.
What happens with Jameson Williams is, does he – because of the ACL, does Kansas City do anything with that? I keep hearing a lot about Kansas City replacing Tyreek Hill with him.
I thought about a key making a trade for Jameson. Jameson would have been the first receiver taken had he been healthy. He, to me, is a guy that won't be probably ready until, what, October, November. He can help you on your stretch run. They're going to trade up for a guy coming off an ACL. I couldn't really wrap my arms around that, so I gave him to New Orleans, who could maybe wait. Anybody can wait a little bit, patient enough. You're getting the best receiver in the draft when he's back healthy. Jameson, when I asked everybody once he had the injury, is he a first, second rounder, everybody came back first. So the intel said first round for a reason. He would have been a top 10 guy. And he's dynamic, and he's a warrior. I mean, he loves this game. He's humble. He's not the me and I guy. He's a we and us guy. He showed that every time another guy had a touchdown catch, not him. He was right over there. He went, oh, not me. I'm going to get somebody. Oh, but he was happy that the team, that Alabama, was winning and what he did on special teams. I think somebody like New Orleans, Kansas City wants him. They're going to have to move up. New England, the Belichick-Saban connection. Will New England try to move up a little bit ahead of New Orleans to get him? It's going to be interesting to see where and how high Jameson Williams comes off the board.
Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN senior NFL draft analyst with his latest mock. Thanks for jumping on with us this morning, Mel.
Yeah, the oldest one. There you go. Take care, guys.
Oh, that's how we heard senior.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
I watched Kyrie since St. Patrick's High School in New Jersey. The game hasn't seen what his package is. Part-time, a quarter of the time, it's the time when he's on the court that is special to watch, because last night was different.
Now it's time to just really focus in on what the goal is, and that's to be in that winner's circle in the next 2 months or so and keep playing until June.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, Nick Friedell giving the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. I call him Tony Bennett because he's got the best pipes in the business. Listen to this guy. What's going on, Nick?
Guys, it's good to be back.
See what I mean?
There it is.
So,
guys, it's good to be back.
It's good
Luke,
to be back.
I am your father.
The mellifluous sounds of Nick Friedell.
Sounds like that was a late game last night,
oh,
too.
Man.
You walked in there, the hair is all messed up. What's going on?
That was a hell of a day yesterday. It started off very sad because of the shooting that was right there, but then we were out there all day, and that game just kept going a little bit, and then Bruce Brown started talking afterwards, guys, and then KD started talking, and what had been a long day became a little bit longer after that.
Let's listen to what Bruce Brown, Nets guard Bruce Brown, had 19 points last night, had to say about the Nets matchup upcoming with the Celtics, who do not have Time Lord Robert Williams available to them.
Now they don't have Robert Williams, so they have less of a presence in the paint. And we could attack Al Horford and Tice. So them not having Robert Williams is huge.
KD, what do you think about what Bruce Brown said? What
did he say? All right, man. That's caffeine probably talking. Take some before the game.
That bothers you, why, that comment?
I mean, we respect our opponents. It's like, we don't need to talk about, you know, what we gonna do to them. Like, I just don't like that, you know. We don't need to say like that. Let's just go out there and hoop.
Nick Friedell, your reaction.
Kevin knew exactly what had been said instantly, because he's hearing what's going on, and he's on the phone, and those tweets started getting rolled through real fast. And as soon as he sat down, that was the first thing he said. There were no questions. Before Kevin even took a question, he's going, what did Bruce Brown say? And you're thinking, oh boy. But he just didn't want to put any gas on the fire. He knows how good the Celtics can be. He was trying to walk back. Bruce Brown's 25 years old. He's pumped up after the game, but he was trying to walk it back, not give him any bulletin board material. He's been in the game a long time. He knows that stuff can take on a life of its own, and I think he was just trying to stomp it out early.
But it wasn't that serious, though, Nick. I mean, it's not like Jason Tatum's waking up to like, look what they said about Robert Williams being out, and they can attack our guy. It's not. I mean, I just feel like Bruce was trying to be somewhat analytical about that is a vulnerability for the Celtics. I get it. Because I've been in basketball for a while, you don't want to give ammunition, but in reality, it's not a big thing.
Jay, Bruce is right.
Yes.
I mean, they aren't the same without Robert Williams. But as soon as Kevin heard that, it was like the older brother was like, "What are you doing?" So we'll see if it has any impact at all. But I would still bet that Kyrie is going to get booed a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, like
Boston.
If Kyrie said exactly. It, that's one thing. But
exactly.
Bruce Brown, I got to worry about what you're saying now. Just calm down.
And Bruce is from Boston, so he is ecstatic to get back there and play in front of his friends and family. But, yeah, if Kyrie said it, totally different deal.
So, according to Kevin Arnovitz, there was discontent, that's a quote, between Kevin Durant and James Harden, which started when Harden showed up to training camp out of shape. Now, KD apparently was astonished, is the word that was used, by his, quote, lack of explosiveness and sluggish play, these quotes from Kevin Arnovitz. What was their relationship like in your experience, Nick?
I think it had started to deteriorate through the year, Max, and anybody who's watched James Harden this year at points last year, you can see he's not the same player he used to be. That explosion isn't the same. And I wasn't around them day to day at the beginning of the year in training camp, but you talk to any of those Nets staffers that were, and they'll tell you he just didn't look like the same player. So you can understand where Kevin's coming from. But, Max, the key to me is the thing that really bothered James Harden the most from January on was the in-and-out nature of Kyrie in the lineup. So while I don't think Harden and Durant's relationship was the same and that bond and that friendship that had been built through the years had started to deteriorate, I think the thing that really pushed everything over the top was Kevin got hurt. Harden got out there on some nights, especially at Barclays, with no Kyrie and was like, what am I doing out here by myself with a team that is not good enough around me? So there were a lot of factors, and certainly the Kevin relationship was a big part of it. But in the end, what pushed it over was that Kyrie wasn't there all the time, and Harden just didn't want to be there by himself on a team that he knew with just him in this stage of his career isn't good enough.
Do you think, quickly, Nick, that Harden can get back to where he was, or has that ship sailed?
I think it's gone. I think he is what he is now, and he's not the same player close to it, frankly, that he used to be. And what's sad about that?
How'd that happen? Last year he was great.
I know, but what's sad about that is, Max, everybody kept saying, he's not getting to the line the same way. You look at his numbers, he's going to the line once more a game than he was a season ago. He's just not getting the whistles where he's running the basket and just kind of flailing, and he's not going to the free throw line the same way. So when you watch Harden, I see a player that at this stage of his career and the fact that he hasn't kept up physically the way a lot of his contemporaries have, that isn't going to get the magic back that we were used to seeing in Houston.
Well, then, Nick, that leads to the $270 million question over 5 years. If they happen to not get to the Eastern Conference Finals, if you're Daryl Morey and you're giving up so much to get him, you don't know how long Joel Embiid's going to continue to stay healthy considering what his career has been like. Do you give him the bag?
Hell no. Jay,
what do you do?
If you're Daryl Morey and you're all the way in, I don't see how you have a different alternative because the league has now seen what James Harden is now, not what he used to be, what he is in the present. But when that deal went down, as frustrated as the Nets were, and it might have cost them their chance of winning a title this season because for all of Harden's flaws, if you put him on a team that has Kyrie and KD healthy, I still think they roll. The problem with Harden is that old self that we're seeing isn't coming back. And if you're Morey and you've seen what you've seen now in the last month and a half or two in Philly, I don't know what the alternative is, but I know that if you're signing him to that deal, at the end of that deal, it's going to look a lot like Russell Westbrook has in L.A. over the last year, which, as we know, just didn't work.
Thank you, Nick Friedell.
Keep L.A. out of your mouth.
Key, I told you that.
Key finally
terrible chimes
in to keep L.A. out of your mouth.
James Harden will be 38 when that deal's done. 37, 38.
Oh,
he's only 32 right now. That's the crazy part, right?
Yeah.
It looks like his body is that of a 40-year-old.
Man, I saw him ball out of control last year, though. Why can't he get that back?
Because when you are not keeping up the way you have to in the game now physically, and that's a 12-month out-of-the-year job, not just when you show up to training camp and work your way back into shape, this is what happens. And guys, I'd add this real quickly. Anybody within that Nets organization who has seen Harden now in Philly is kind of going, yep, this is what we saw at times over the last year and a half.
Nick Friedell, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Nick.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
J. Will and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80. Key?
Yo!
So, you got something to read over there, huh?
I don't have anything to read. What do I have to read?
All right.
Jay had it.
I'll be honest. Jay had something to read, but I don't know where Jay went. I literally have no idea where my talent is. If anybody
and you
knows
literally
where Jay
said,
is, if you see him walking around Seaport, 888-SAY-ESPN, we have no idea where Jay is.
I have an idea.
If and you just said to him,
did he
like,
leave his phone
message? He's
the
type of
the
dude,
tweets?
He can't walk and chew gum at the same time, because you literally just said to him, hey, Jay, we want you in additional content to read the text. And he, like, left.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, what are you doing?
I have an idea where to find him, but by the time I get there, this little additional content will be over. There he is.
Hopefully he washed his damn hands.
I don't know if he did. He was still buttoning up when he came in. I don't know if the hands were washed or not, to be honest.
I'm here.
So,
hands what are you washed. Doing, Jason?
I went to the bathroom.
You got to read. You have a tweet or a text to read.
Yes, I have a text to
who
read.
Who is it from? What is it about?
From Bart Scott. Let me read you verbatim what he said to you, Key. Key, I will whoop that ass. Let's do it. I'm from Detroit. 41-inch vertical. You know it. Damn straight I can dribble. On God, the Eastern Bunny. Or Santa Claus, please. Stiff neck? Hell no. Nah. You can't keep up with me. I'm a college safety, Key. Let's put it up. Oh. Verbatim. That's what he says. A lot of text messages.
Did he write the Eastern Bunny, or did you just say the Eastern Bunny?
No, he said on God.
Easter Bunny, not Eastern.
On God.
Yes. Come on now, Jay.
Easter Bunny or Santa Claus.
All the holy
please.
Sacred things. Yes.
Exclamation point.
Well, first of all, he walks like a duck, okay? So that in itself is bad. And he played linebacker. That's even worse. I'm an ex-safety. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm a college safety.
Safeties can't cover. Ooh. That means that they have stiff hips and can't move.
Stiff hips?
Stiff.
Yes, got it.
I know you ain't talking.
Awkward.
Easter.
This is all.
Easter, yeah, E-S, Easter.
This is
Easter.
All an issue. Because of what Bart and Han, ESPN Radio, noon Eastern, what Bart Scott and Alan Han were saying about an ESPN potential hoops tournament.
Max, can you pick up your energy a little bit? I need a little bit more gravitas.
Jay, you weren't even here at the beginning of the segment.
I had to expend so much energy covering for you that I'm out now. All right. Now we're out of time, and we can't play you that sound from Barton Hahn, but it went
seconds.
Something like this. Key and Jay are bad at basketball. We would beat them. Something
yeah,
like
right.
That.
Lies. And I did wash my hands.
My money's on my guys, man. I got a buck easy.
Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Max.
Bart Scott and Alan Hahn had the following to say about an ESPN, a potential ESPN basketball tournament.
Jay Will and Keyshawn, you know, we sweep the leg, but you know, sweep the leg on Jay Weezy.
That's easy.
Keyshawn gonna run out of breath.
I like Han. Han is cool. That's John Concat.
Allen's a dude that when he gets off the team bus, you be like, damn, he big. He look like he can play.
Yeah, he cool.
And then
cool.
You see him in warm up line, he's cool. Like, oh, this ain't
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he number 40. He number 45. He cool.
He faked us out.
What should we talk about? 9:45 segment. Well, it's 9:48. What should we talk about? The last segment of the show, it's Choose Your Own Adventure. You get to produce the show, so you vote on it at Key, Jay, and Max, okay? So 17% want us to talk about is Alan Hahn, John Konchak, right?
Konchak,
whatever the name of it.
Whatever
I don't remember.
Is, right?
21% and change, Bart can't wait to lose. 30%, Bart and Hahn versus KJM, 31.2% ESPN 2-on-2 hoops. That's what we're talking about, ESPN 2-on-2 hoops. That's the whole company-wide situation. I don't think you can include strictly NBA shows with former players,
no,
right?
No, every show.
All right.
Bart, we're not going to beat Jefferson, man. We not. We can't do that.
Bart Scott is on with us right now. Key and Jay, what's going on, Bart?
What's up, fellas? Keep my partner's name out your mouth.
Why are you trying to sweep your leg,
boy,
though, man?
My boy, Concat.
Why are you trying to sweep my leg, though, Bart?
No, no, no. See, listen. You understand I'm a movie buff. It has nothing to do with
the reference. Put him in a body bag, Johnny. I got it.
It has to do with being tap-tap. Everybody knows I'm from Detroit. Tap-tap bad boys. It's talking about physicality, not sweeping the actual leg. And I can't believe Keyshawn's going to call him. What do you call him? Concat? Then that means you're Kevin Duckworth then, Keyshawn.
No, he's not talking to you. I think Keyshawn's
right now. No, I'm not tapped out. I'm just listening to him go ahead and rant. You know, Bart, he just get to talking. That's why he got in this mess in the first place, running his damn mouth and not thinking.
Mm-mm. Like Key. Like, you're saying I'm not an athlete because I'm a linebacker? That is disrespectful. We got families too, man. We athletes.
Be honest, though, Bart, in all honesty, because we're going to do this. We really are going to do this. You really honestly think that you and Alan Hahn, your co-host, mm-hmm. can beat me and Jay Will in a game of hoops?
Absolutely. But let's not just stop there. What I was suggesting was that we bring back the old school ESPN Worldwide of Sports, and we go through five events and go through, like, where you have people cross – compete against each other. But I absolutely, Keith, like, stop.
Joe Frazier almost drowned in that
did,
one. Yeah.
I did that already, and I didn't do well, so I don't want to do that again. Because they added swimming. They added some swimming and cycling and all.
Bart,
that wasn't
what
work.
Makes you forget we'll get, about we'll, – don't we'll expand we'll this. Let's keep this board. To basketball. Hold on.
We'll get you a paddleboard. We'll get you a paddleboard.
Bart, let's keep this.
Absolutely.
Bart Scott.
Absolutely.
Bart Scott, let's not let this get off the rails. Let's keep it to basketball. The issue, the challenge was in basketball. What makes you so sure? What makes you confident that you can beat a two-time player of the year in Jay Will, national champion, second overall pick in the draft, and Key, who has balled on the regular with NBA players, giving them run and fits in? What makes you think that you two guys can beat them in hoops?
But this is what you're assuming. You're assuming that I haven't played against NBA basketball guys. You assume because you see the thick neck that I've always been as well. When I got in the league, I was only 220 pounds, bro. I played basketball as well. Like, I'm a five-sport athlete as well. So, like, you talk about the smoking, can I dribble? I absolutely can dribble. You know what I'm saying? I'll go ahead and pat Keyshawn on the ass on the way to the hoop, which way he wanted, left hand or right hand. And the 40-inch vertical suggests that I can get airborne easy. So don't let the puffy chest and the creatine fool you.
You look like
I'm only 236 pounds. Where that became overweight, I have no idea. Like I said, I have no problem going shirts and skin so everybody can see that wonderful four-pack that I still walk around with. I'm still in shape, baby. I'm still cocked
so
like a
pimple. So if you and Key, more or less, whoever thinks they're better, if you cancel out, then what makes you think Alan Hahn, because he's 6'6", can stay with Jay Will, two-time player of the year?
First of all, we just have to go after the fish, and the fish is Keyshawn.
I guess because Jay played in the NBA, but I ain't gonna say it. I'm gonna let you feel the pain.
You said a lot. You went all the way.
I'm gonna let you feel the pain.
Nobody says nothing about your stretch pants walking around in the hallways of ESPN Radio with the moose knuckle. Nobody says nothing.
Look, duck feet. Okay. Nobody is going to. Look, I understand that you 230 pounds and you got a washboard for a stomach and all. I get all that. And you got a thick neck and you play linebacker. You don't play sports anymore. So stop trying to talk tough.
I'm in bar class. I'm at Rumble Boxing. And Keith, it is direct film. If we go back to the film, we have film of me checking you in football too, Keith. I don't know if you realize that. But I also play squat corner. I check Chad Johnson at the squat corner.
Oh, God. What did they do? Walk you out? What did Rex do? Walk you out? What did he do? Walk you out on me and jam me?
I sliced that Severo out, and I was right there. I feel bad for the basketball when you're dribbling. It looks like it's going to burn.
Pay-per-view fight. It's a pay-per-view fight right now.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting LectricEbikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.